who drew up the faulty design. Grant Simpson, who approved the unreliable reinforcing bars and the fatally weakened concrete mixture. His stepfather regarded him with ill-concealed contempt. "Don't look at me for help, young man. You made your bed. Now you've got to lie in it." Die in it, Grant thought. The courts were working up an indictment for mass murder. Any moment now the police will come to take me away. Grant had to run for his life. He fled to the moon, where the men and women governing Cellini at least listened to his side of the story and reluctantly gave him a chance to make good on his never-used job permit. South Africa tried to have him extradited, but Cellini, independent since its short, sharp war against Earth's United Nations, refused to cooperate. Grant immediately applied for citizenship, which was eventually granted. Cellini's need for men and women who were willing to work outweighed the tragedy in South Africa. Grant worked very hard. Outside, for the most part, out on the airless lunar surface, building the solar farms that provided Cellini's electrical power, constructing the second electrical catapult that hurled cargoes of lunar ores off the moon to the space stations in Earth orbit, erecting factories on the floor of Crater Alphonsus, factories that produced, among other things, the clipper ship rockets that became the backbone of transportation between the moon and Earth, and, in slightly modified form, hypersonic aircraft that brought every place on Earth no more than an hour's flight from any other place on Earth. Out in the open on Alphonsus's dusty, rock-strewn floor, Grant could look up and see the blue and white sphere of the Earth hanging above him. He willed himself to feel no remorse. He told himself that he had cut all his ties with the world of his birth. He knew he would never again see the dim-witted, know-nothing tyrant who had married his mother, or the mother who allowed the lout to dominate her, or the regimentation of a government that grew more restrictive, more authoritarian, with each new wave of desperate millions migrating into South Africa. He didn't have to deal with the fools and opportunists and out-and-out thieves who grasped at power and money for themselves at the expense of everyone else. He had left Earth far behind him, forever. Or so he told himself. He worked in a spacesuit, of course. He learned to accept the restrictions imposed by the burdensome, awkward suits. Gloves that needed tiny servo motors just to flex the fingers adequately. Canned air that chilled his lungs. Lunar dust that crept into the suit's joints and made them grind to an arthritic halt if you didn't clean the suits thoroughly every time you used them. The biggest danger of working outside was the radiation, of course. Invisible, impalpable subatomic bullets rained down from the sun and stars, blanketing the lunar surface every moment of every day and night. The suits protected their wearers against radiation, but only up to a point. A person was allowed to spend only so many hours outside on the surface. Exceeding that limit meant that even with the suit's protection, the wearer was accumulating a dangerous dose of radiation. Cellini's safety department had very strict rules about radiation exposure. But a hard-working engineer who had jobs to complete could be clever enough to evade the rules. Records could be doctored. Radiation dosage badges could be switched or even lost. Getting the job done was more important than allowing the nitpicking safety prigs to force you off the project. Grant worked hard, very hard, out on the moon's radiation-drenched surface. Happily, most of his fellow workers were almost as hard-driving as he was. Most of them. And even the medical staff who monitored the workers' health status were lenient enough to let them get away with bending the safety regulations. Besides, there were medications to be had that could protect you from the damaging effects of long-term radiation exposure. Grant Simpson got those medications from fellow workers who knew where and how to obtain them. He took steroids, too, to improve his stamina out there in the open. He worried about taking such medications. Drugs, really, he thought. What am I putting into my body? He asked himself. At first. Once he found that the meds allowed him to work longer, harder, he put such worries behind him. Getting the job done was the important thing. Within a year, Grant was dependent on those medications. They didn't interfere with his work, they enhanced his performance. Steroids could be dangerous, he knew, but he soon realized that he couldn't survive without them. What choice do I have? He asked himself. He worked hard. He got the job done. One of the side effects of the steroids, though, was a heightened tendency to anger. Roid rage. All his life, Grant had kept his emotions bottled inside him. Now, with the steroids coursing through his blood, the anger burst out. He got into fights, real bloody-knuckled, body-battering fights. He expected the people around him to do their jobs, and most of them did, but the few goof-offs and gold-breakers among his crew infuriated him beyond his self-control. After a wild brawl that smashed up the bar he and his crew frequented, Grant was brought before Cellini's personnel board and expelled from the technical staff. Devastated, Grant pleaded that he could not return to Earth, where an indictment for mass murder still hung over him. "You'll be killing me," he begged. After two excruciating days of deliberation, the board informed Grant that he could apply for a position with the technical staff that was building the astronomical facility on the far side of the moon. He swiftly, gratefully accepted. But he could not avoid a routine physical examination when he arrived at Farside, carried out by Farside's resident physician, Dr. Ida Capstein, a heavy-set woman with hard ice-blue eyes. "Your liver function is deteriorating, you know," she said, coolly unconcerned. "The ache in my back," Grant realized. "It's from all the shit you've been putting into yourself. Your blood sample looks like a pharmaceutical company's product list, for God's sake." I've been taking medications," he stammered. "I've heard about your getting into fistfights at Cellini. Roid rage, isn't it?" "Oh, my God," Grant thought. "She's going to redline me. If I can't work here at Farside, they'll ship me back to Earth. Back to South Africa." Sullenly, he muttered, "I can control it." "Sure you can." It took Grant several minutes before he understood that Dr. Capstein wasn't threatening to redline him. She was offering to sell Grant the steroids and anti-radiation medications he had become dependent on. Dr. Capstein had a thriving little business going, and Grant would swiftly become her steadiest customer. "I'll take good care of you," Dr. Capstein told him. "You just put yourself in my care and you'll be okay. The safety department's rules are way too restrictive anyway." Grant agreed mutely. "I'll take good care of you," she repeated. "For a price." Broken Mirror. Grant felt tired and irritable as he pulled the hard-shell torso of his spacesuit over his head and slid his arms through the flexible sleeves. "Freaking suit smells like old sweat socks," he grumbled to himself. "It's time to requisition a new one. The ulcer'll hit the ceiling. I bet he hired McClintock to help keep the program's costs down." It was an hour after his meeting with McClintock. "You do the work, and I'll take the credit," the man had said. "Great," thought Grant. "What choice do I have?" "Well, anyway, I ought to get a new suit out of it." The woman who was going outside with him was already suited up, helmet and all. She checked out his suit, then Grant checked out hers. The old buddy system. Never go out on the surface alone. Good rule, except there were times when you had to. Rules are made to be broken, or at least bent. "Let's make this quick," the woman said as Grant fastened his fishbowl helmet to his suit's neck ring. "I got a date for dinner." With their highly tinted helmets over their heads, neither person could make out the face of the other. Together they clomped heavily to the airlock, got the go-ahead from the excursion controller, snug and happy in her booth deep inside, and finally stepped out onto the surface of Mare Moscovienze. It was still daylight out there, although the sun was dipping down toward the slumped old ringwall mountains. Long shadows were stretching across the dusty, undulating floor of the Sea of Moscow. Grant took it all in with a glance, then stepped out of the airlock and headed toward the cracked mirror. "Into the Valley of Death," muttered his companion. "Rode the 600. Grant shook his head inside his helmet. "We're missing 598 guys. "Yeah, I know." The damned mirror was sitting out there, next to the big airlock of the mirror lab, slightly tilted on the uneven ground. Its delicately figured glass was covered by a thin sheet of metal that